This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Mark Bergevin addressed his backup goalie situation, acquiring Jake Allen from the Blues in exchange for a third-round pick. The team's also swapping seventh-rounders. The move gives St. Louis some cap space as they try to re-sign captain Alex Pietrangelo. Allen has one more year on his deal, which carries a $4.35 million.
I get the trade from the St. Louis Blues perspective. Not sure I understand the unanimous praise that was coming to Mark Bergevin from the Montreal Canadiens' perspective. Talk about that this segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. A happy and safe Labor Day long weekend to those of you who are celebrating and enjoying some time with the family, or maybe you're getting your last camping trips in and you're listening to us at the campsite, wherever you may be. Maybe you're on your way out to the cottage, wherever you may be tuning in from. We're pleased that you're able to join us on this Saturday morning for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, it's over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I was at Bernstein's on Thursday with Naomi.
Yes.
And I was really tempted. I would say 99.9% of the time I go with the Illegal Curve Sandwich, but on Thursday, because the vegan kale seitan.
Yes.
Or seitan, or whatever
I think
it
it's
is.
Seitan
burger.
Yeah. It's not Satan.
No,
but
it's
kale,
not Miroslav Shatan either.
Yeah.
I tried that burger because it was so good. We had that on last weekend's show.
Yes.
And it's available for a couple more days there at Bernstein's, but it's so good, and it's been getting such good reviews there. So if you have a chance, you're in the River Heights area, head over to Bernstein's and just name drop me, and they'll take care of you.
Yeah, by immediately asking you to leave the facility and never coming
back.
They'll
just charge you double for
the charge you double.
Yeah, they'll probably put on a surtax.
Yeah, it's called the Ezzy
tax.
Surcharge.
To your point there, Ezzy, actually, my wife and I, Laura and I actually ordered the burgers as well.
Nice.
Last night for dinner. It's not, I'm typically not a vegan burger guy, but it was a pretty damn good burger.
Yeah, you're a meatitarian.
I am a meatitarian.
You like your corned beef and your brisket?
I like my meat. That's very true. It was a good burger, but we went back and had another shtickle of burger last night. Yeah. The kale seitan available at Bernstein's Deli for a limited time. Get your hands on it before it's too late. So the trade, we talked about it. Jake Allen, you know, who is making $4.25 million per season, if I'm not mistaken, for one more year, gets dealt from the St. Louis Blues to the Montreal Canadiens, $4.35 million to be exact. And in exchange, the Habs give up basically a third-round pick. The team swapped seventh-round picks, but let's ignore those. To me, Montreal is, you know, they're taking on a hefty salary for one year to go with Carey Price's already hefty salary. And I know they wanted a good backup goaltender, but you're doing the Blues a favor by helping them with their salary cap situation because they try to re-sign Alex Pietrangelo, and you're still giving up a third-round pick for this? I just don't understand this trade from the Montreal perspective, and to have that much money wrapped up in your goaltending situation. To me, I found it to be a bizarre move by Mark Bergevin.
I didn't think it was bizarre, Drew. I mean, I agree with you that you have a lot of money tied up in goaltending, but I think if you're Mark Bergevin, you're looking at what's been going on in the playoffs, and you're saying Jake Allen is a guy that is expendable, because we know that the St. Louis Blues need money, not just to sign Alex Pietrangelo, but to sign Vince Dunn.
Yeah.
Is a pending RFA, right? So I think what they're doing, and, you know, I know that, you know, Dave follows the American Hockey League more than anybody. Caden Primo is a really good goalie. He was a seventh rounder, I think 2017, Dave, if I'm not mistaken, 2017 or 2018 draft. Caden Primo is kind of that goalie, that backup goalie of the future. Like, I don't think Carey Price is going to be usurped anytime soon, but Caden Primo is 21 years old, but he's a couple years away, or at least a year away, right? So what they're thinking is, Keith Kincaid, former Devils goalie, was not good last year.
2017 seventh round pick.
Right. Keith Kincaid had a rough year last year.
Right.
And I think what they saw, like, they had Charlie Lindgren and Caden Primo. They were kind of, you know, playing here and there. We know that Carey Price is going to play, you know, around 50 games, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this, to me, it's not complicated. I mean, yes, again, there's a price. I mean, St. Louis didn't retain any of the salary, so Montreal is paying, you know, all of that salary to Jake Allen, but it's for 1 year. So what you're doing is you're trying to have a situation like you have in Boston or like you do in Vancouver, right? Like, you're looking at these teams, or Colorado, like Pavel Francouz, I realize, wasn't good in that second round series, but what they're doing here is they're just making sure they have a bona fide number two goalie, not a number one or a 1B. And I realize, Drew, again, I know what you're thinking. You're saying, yeah, but why, you know, why spend all that money? Well, because another team probably would.
Even if you're spending the money. So to me, there's the two issues. There's the spending of the salary cap allotment. You're allotting almost $15 million of an $81 million salary cap to the goaltending position,
which is the most important.
The position of goaltending is what you're saying. Yeah. Well, fair enough. Fine. But
if you're going to put a lot of your money in one position, I would say it should be goaltending.
Fine, but here's my but. One, you're paying a third-round pick for this to get Jake Allen, which to me is an overpay. When you're St. Louis Blues and they're desperate to try and make salary cap room, you're telling me that getting Jake Allen off their books isn't worth, you know, a sixth-round pick in their mind as opposed to a third-round pick? And then secondly, if you want a high-quality backup goaltender, and I understand that, this offseason, there's going to be an exceptional number, and I see you nodding next to me, Dave. There's going to be an exceptional number of goaltenders available. There's a glut of goaltenders that are going to be on the market.
How many of those guys are going to be worth $4 million, though?
I wouldn't pay $4 million for them. That's my point.
Are you talking about Matt Murray?
No, no, I'm not necessarily.
Are you talking about Robin Leonard?
I'm not talking about Robin Leonard. Carey Price. I'm talking about, you go find an...
You said glut of goalies. Who are you talking about?
There's going to be a ton of unrestricted free agent goaltenders. I can pull them up right now that are going to be available that you can get for maybe $1.5 million or maybe $2 million. You're still going to use...
Are they as good as Jake Allen, though?
I don't think, but he's your backup. You don't want Jake Allen.
But Drew, that's the point. You want a good, like,
yeah, you want a good backup.
I
understand
you're saying in a sense. I like this trade more so for St. Louis. Don't get me wrong. And we haven't even talked about this. By trading Jake Allen, you're saying that Jordan Binnington is still your guy,
yeah,
right? Like, to me, that's what's being lost here a little bit. I think people are. I agree with you that people are praising this move for Montreal a little bit too much. Like, to me, this isn't really like a trade that somebody's won yet.
Wouldn't you rather if you're Montreal, and sure, Jake Allen. I mean, Jake Allen has had his peaks and valleys, and when he's good,
specifically against Winnipeg,
when he's at his peak, he's very good. He's a starting goaltender in the NHL. But when he's in his valleys, he can't stop a beach ball, and we've seen him in both ways. And that's probably why he's more suited for a backup goaltender role than a starting goaltender role. But in terms of actual dollars allotted to this and a draft pick, wouldn't you rather go out and sign Brian Elliott?
Well, I mean, look, you got
for $2 million and not have to give up a third round pick at the same time?
Yeah, I mean,
Mike Smith.
But again, you're overpaying a little bit.
You're paying
for Jake Allen.
In my mind, and I appreciate
your
opinion.
You're saying it's both money and draft.
You're paying too much money, and you're giving up too high of a draft pick. Aside from that, I like to trade for Montreal.
No, but again, I mean, my opinion doesn't really matter because the trades already happened, right? All I'm saying, and I'm not a Mark Bergevin, you know, supporter here. I'm just saying I was explaining why the move was made. You said at the top of the segment you thought it was bizarre. I just don't think it's bizarre because when you have a backup goaltender that was as bad, and again, I don't want to pick on Keith Kincaid, but he really was bad last year. That's what I'm saying. I'm not, again, Drew, I'm not saying Montreal won the trade.
No one's disputing that.
You're paying a third round pick to get a really good backup goaltender.
No one's disputing that Montreal needed to improve the backup goaltender position. No question about that.
You're just saying they paid too high a price.
I'm saying they paid too high a price, and I think they have too much money.
I don't disagree
with. In a flat cap situation, I think they have too much money allotted to your goaltending position at $15 million.
Yeah, I mean, like, the interesting thing is their number one forward right now is Jonathan Drouin, who makes $5.5 million. So they're not having to pay anybody. Max Domi's an RFA next season. You know, that's pretty much it in terms of, like, guys are going to have to give big contracts, not necessarily a big contract, but a contract to next season. So they've got a little bit of flexibility, but I know what you're saying, Drew. I mean, if you look at, like, the free agent list, I mean, those guys are going to make a lot of money, but you got Holpe, Crawford, Howard, Leonard, Craig Anderson, Matt Murray, Jacob Markstrom, Thomas Greiss, Cam Talbot, Khudobin, like, there's a ton of guys out there. So you maybe didn't have to give up the pick. I mean, you know, in terms of, I agree with Ez. Like, the money is, if you have that flexibility, if you have that room, it's only a one-year deal.
Right.
And to be able to get a guy, and I think we've talked about this a million times, the era of playing goaltenders 60 to 65 games is really not. It's not as
there aren't many guys that do that.
That's
anymore.
Right. And
like Connor
is,
Hellebuyck is one of the only guys. Right. You know that you're talking about a handful of goalies.
Right.
But I think you know. Getting off of, you know, this move for a second here, I think what's been clearly evident is not only do you have to have a strong backup, you have to have a strong third-string goaltender,
100%.
Right? And obviously, we didn't expect Michael Hutchinson to come in and have a .938 save percentage in the two games that he won. But, I mean, you have to have someone in a situation like this, and it's different. Sure, you're in a situation with the bubble, and you would be able to easily have a third goaltender, mm-hmm. you know, come in, but it's a little, there's some different, you know, logistic complications, but the point is, you want to have a very strong backup. And did you overpay? Would you be more comfortable giving up a fifth-round pick than a third-round pick? I'm with you there, Drew, but obviously Montreal felt it was worth the third-round pick, and they're going to pay for it.
I just wonder if they were a little, you know, I usually am an advocate of a team being proactive rather than reactive. I wonder if, in this instance, if the Canadians were maybe a little too proactive and they should have waited a little longer to see how the market plays out. Before necessarily, you know, is this trade for Jake Allen still going? Montreal could probably make this trade a month from now.
And not give up the third.
Yeah. And not give up the
yeah,
third.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And I mean, St. Louis is a team, as he outlined it already, so I'm not going to go through it, who have players they need to get signed. So you're going to have a little more. They're not the ones who are in the driver's seat.
I think the Habs had leverage.
Yeah.
They didn't use it.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
That's my point. So I'm not in love with the move as much as a lot of other people are, but, you know, que sera, sera. I'm sure those people will still go on with their day knowing that I disapprove of their opinion. When we come back, we're going to talk about our UFA of the week. He comes from the Boston Bruins. He's a left-shot defenseman. He's a puck possession monster. He's a 50-point defenseman. He's Torey Krug. UFA of the week coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Do you want to do a 1 year and bet on yourself? Are you opposed to that?
Yeah, I'm very opposed to that. I've bet on myself and, you know, I've taken shorter term deals and, you know, less amount of money my whole career now. So this is my time.
Boston Bruins defenseman Torey Krug saying he's not going for a short-term deal. He's not taking a hometown discount. He's done that. He's been there, done that. He wants to get paid, and I appreciate his honesty. Certainly, you know, saying, you know, it's, you know, back the Brinks truck up. I'm going to make some money.
He wants big boy money.
He wants big boy money. He deserves big boy money, too, you know, to that effect. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. That's us. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Todd Ness is performing two shows, and then next week, making his first appearance on the stage at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, legendary comedian Jeremy Hotz will be in town. Get your tickets now, rumorscomedyclub.com. They will not last. In fact, I believe there's very few available, so get your tickets now to see Jeremy Hotz next week at Rumors, Todd Ness tonight at Rumors. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Torey Krug, our UFA of the week. You know, all the talk regarding defensemen has been focused on Alex Pietrangelo so far from the St. Louis Blues. Torey Krug, to me, you know, calling him a consolation prize isn't even appropriate. Torey Krug is a offensive, minute-munching, puck-possession, top-four, top-pairing, left-side defenseman, and he's going to make a lot of money this offseason,
yeah.
Even in a flat salary cap situation.
Absolutely. And, you know, Charlie McAvoy, you know, he's going to get paid, right? And so Torey Krug, it's just unfortunate that, you know, it can't work out for him, but he's a guy that could probably make $8 million or more per year, right? Like, that's how mm-hmm. good he is. He's been a consistent 40 to 50 point guy for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now, right? So I agree with you, Drew. And the thing with Torey Krug is he's a smaller defenseman, very shifty, but he's got a physical bite to his game that I like. Like, Krug is a guy you remember going back to last year's playoffs when the Bruins went to the Stanley Cup final against the Blues. Like, he's a guy that is engaged physically. Like, that's not, I would say, you know, the biggest part of his game, because he's a guy that can, you know, quarterback the power play. He's just, he's great at 5-on-5. I agree. Like, when you're talking about possession, like, he's that modern day NHL defenseman, right? So I think there's going to be many teams that are after him, and, you know, we can maybe get into some of those teams, but I think that when you're talking about Krug, I think you would have to be careful, I think a little bit careful, depending on how many years he wants, because I don't think that you want to necessarily, you know, pencil him in for this offensive output for a while. And we've seen this, right? Like, even a guy like Erik Karlsson, I mean, defensemen are, you know, what is Krug, 27, 28 years old?
29.
I mean,
he's 29. He'll be 29. 30. He'll be 30 next April.
Right. So then even more reason to, you know, I think what I'm saying, Drew, is I would be much comfortable if I was a GM giving him 5 years. As opposed to 7.
5 years at a higher AAV than 7.
Yeah. And I think he'll get it. Like, I really do think there's going to be some teams out there, especially, like, you know, a team that, to me, that makes a lot of sense, and it's not going to be easy for them to make this happen, but, like, to me, like a Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Like Pittsburgh, like the type of game that they play, right? Like, they like to score off the rush, and you've got all those, you know, speedy wingers like Jake Guentzel and you know, Brian Rust. And, like, to me, like, I would love to see a Torrey Krug in Pittsburgh. Obviously, you know, Bruins and Penguins are, you know, pretty big rivals. But when you're a UFA, you can go anywhere. So it doesn't matter about, you know, in conference, in division. So there's other teams. I know, like,
I think a lot of people are sort of earmarking the Detroit Red Wings for him.
Yes, Red Wings.
Especially
because
he's a Michigan guy.
He's a Michigan guy. Now, the question is, does Torrey Krug want to go to a Detroit team that is clearly rebuilding?
Right.
I mean, that's not a team.
And will be rebuilding for a while.
Right. That's not a team that's sniffing. I mean, if everything worked out perfectly next year, maybe they sniff the playoffs. That's the ceiling for the Detroit Red Wings. When you're used to being on the Boston Bruins and you're used to eating caviar and steak every night, do you want to go back and start eating click and spam with the Red Wings organization for the next couple of years?
What is click?
Click is, I think, lower grade spam, if I'm not mistaken.
Whoa,
is it spelt C-L-I-C-K?
I think it's K-L-I-K, if I'm not mistaken. This is. Let me Google. Right, we have
you
computers.
Do that.
This,
you do.
You guys
do
talk
that.
About my point.
I'm pretty sure that click just became the segment, not Torrey Krug.
Well, the fact that Drew knew about that is something we'll have to talk about off air. But you know what? I mean, look, Steve Yzerman and the Detroit Brain Trust. I mean, you know, selling
click is a Canadian spam wannabe. Thank you, Google.
You're a wannabe. No, let me finish my point. The fact is that, you know, to be able to make that pitch with some of the young talent that's on Detroit and say that you could be part of that future, you know, you have some money to spend. I mean, and it's clear that Krug himself isn't interested in a short-term deal. I mean, when asked in his end of season availability, his response was, I'm very opposed to that. I've bet on myself and I've taken short-term deals and less amount of money my whole career. So this is my time in terms of my value at its peak, and I have the ability and I'm in a position now where I need to make the most of it. So I'm very opposed to something like that. I've done it long enough now, and that's the situation I'm facing. And to me, you know, I mean, again, he's one of those stories you love. He's an undrafted player who, you know, rose up through the ranks and ends up being this guy who's going to earn himself a monster contract.
Yeah.
So, like, those are the guys that you always kind of like, you love to see, the guys who so many people missed, and this is the guy who now is writing his own ticket. And to me, and again, like I said, I like the idea of a Detroit simply because, you know, I mean, if Steve Yzerman gives your agent a call and says, let's have a conversation, you could be part of the solution to turn things around in your hometown. Again, if you give him the money he wants and you give him the opportunity to be kind of a hometown hero, Detroit's a nice, it's a fun city.
Is Torrey Krug not an option for the Jets?
Well, I mean,
like, honestly, though, I'm not saying it's going to happen, guys, but like,
the Jets should be calling him when the free agency window opens. The Jets should certainly be making that call.
And I realize that, you know, the right side is the bigger weakness there, but like,
I don't think it is.
If you're able to sign, you know, Dylan DeMello and Dylan DeMello, Tucker Poolman and Neil Pionker, your right side defenseman, and then you've got Torrey Krug and Josh Morrissey as your 1 and 2 left shot defenseman. I mean, you're going to have to pay Krug probably $7 to $8 million. I would have no problem with that.
Wait, didn't you just lose a defenseman who you're paying $7.6 million to?
You slot Bufflin's money. I mean, if they can get Krug, I don't believe that the Jets are. I mean, I'm sure they're going to make a call. I don't believe that Torrey Krug is going to end up in Winnipeg. The Jets just don't get those high-priced, free, unrestricted free agents. They have, as of yet, have not been able to get those guys into Winnipeg, into the organization. They call and they pitch, I'm sure, but they haven't been able to consummate a deal with an UFA like that.
You've got a lot of players from Michigan here.
True, that you do have a lot of a Michigan connection. But to me, I mean, if the Jets sign Torrey Krug and your left side is Morrissey and Krug, I don't know that you need to sign DeMelo on your right side as well. Every team has a weakness mm-hmm. or has an area where they're not necessarily able to fill it with bona fide top flight NHL defensemen. You know, if the Jets shore up their left side, I'm not sure that that second pairing right side becomes as big a need as it did, as it does right now with nobody on the left and nobody on the right.
Well, you need somebody there because if you're not re-signing DeMelo, I mean, you've got Tucker Pullman and you've got Neil Pionk, but you don't have anybody else on the right side.
Well, you've got
Sammy Niku, right?
You fill in the gap with somebody.
Sure.
You don't necessarily have to dip in and go spend big money or significant UFA
and
money.
I agree. I mean, this is all speculation. All I'm saying is, to me, like, the Jets are a fast team, right? Like, we know that the Jets are a great offensive team mm-hmm. that can burn you off the rush. We touched on that, you know, during the season. You know, a lot of the Jets' goals come, you know, within 5 seconds of getting in that offensive zone. And that's the way Torrey Krug plays, right? Like, he's a fast, skilled player. So all I'm saying is he would look great in a Jets jersey. I have no idea if that's going to happen. But I think that's exactly what they need.
I agree. It's exactly what they need. And it's, you know, obviously it'll be something. Any team that gets Torrey Krug is going to be upgrading on the left side of their defense. Yep. And that's certainly a good position, for them to be in,
like,
for Torrey Krug and his representatives to be in.
Right. You could honestly make an argument for 20 teams.
Steven Wino is going to join us after the break, but I just want to point out that I've now angered the Click fan, the Click
mob. I saw that.
Yeah. North End Rick, how dare you denigrate Click? And then Ken says, guys, we grew up on Click in Winnipeg. It's like a fancy upgrade to spam.
How have
awesome
I never heard
fried.
Of this? Like, for someone
yeah,
that
for
consider,
somebody,
considers themselves like a 7-Eleven connoisseur,
That would have been more like the 7-Eleven that wasn't actually...
Like a Max?
It was actually written as 7 and then like an 11. I think there's one on Main Street. It's like 7-Eleven and a half or something like that.
I think I'm going to have some Click and some Twinkies tonight for dinner.
Well, that's usually about what the...
It seems like the dinner of champions for Mr. Ginsburg.
Yeah. Remember we were talking about Mike McIntyre losing weight?
Oh, yeah.
I think we know who's gaining it instead.
Right there.
When we come back...
This is my Click right here.
When we come back, Steven Wino joins us from the bubble in Edmonton to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. A lot of comments coming in about our Click conversation. We'll get to that coming up at 11:15. We'll open up the inbox and see what people are talking about there. Click, Ehlers, Line A, things of that nature. You can, of course, reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the bubble in Edmonton, we're pleased to be joined by Associated Press hockey writer Steven Wino. Steven, good morning. Are you out of quarantine yet, or are you still stuck in a hotel room?
Good morning. I am on day 9 of quarantine in my basement unit of an Airbnb so I can get some fresh air.
Well, that's good. Some fresh air is nice. That helps. So you can the walls aren't closing in as terribly as they might be.
No, that has helped keep me sane. That and the beer delivery.
The beer delivery. That's the important part. I mean, yeah, because you know that would be cruel and inhuman punishment if you were in quarantine and not able to have beer at the same time. So.
Yeah, Steven, we're happy that you got the Torque Blonde that we sent you. I follow you on Instagram, so I see that you've been having a different Canadian beer every day of the week. So we're happy that you got that package.
Thank you. That Torque Blonde is great, and I'm looking to try to find some Lake of the Woods beer around here too.
There you go. You're at least you're making the best of an awkward situation. I think that'd be the nicest way to put it. You know, Steven, obviously a couple game sevens in Edmonton last night. The first one goes to overtime. The dramatic winner by Joel Kiviranta, beating Michael Hutchinson, a guy getting a hat trick. You know, when he really had no business playing, if it wasn't for the Andrew Cogliano injury. I mean, isn't that just sort of 2020 in a nutshell, right there? A guy in game seven of in overtime, getting a hat trick, a guy that really very few people, unless they're, you know, avid, rabid Dallas Stars fans have heard of, and he comes in and is the hero last night?
Yeah, literally, like, I'm not even ashamed of the fact that I've never heard of Joel Kiviranta until yesterday. And he, obviously a guy was playing in Traverse City last year in that prospects tournament, and now a hat trick in a Stanley Cup playoff game, his third playoff game total. Yeah, it's 2020 and it's hockey, and the Vegas game was a little bit of that too, and just that this is what happens. You could run into a hot goalie, and maybe the team that doesn't deserve to win a game wins it. Dallas deserved to win that game, and I think Colorado, if Philip Grubauer or Pablo Francouz were healthy, might have been able to kind of come back and win that series, might have put a scare into Vegas in the conference final. But Dallas is a good team. And when you have the depth that Jim Nill's been able to put together there, that a guy like Joel Kiviranta is able to produce like that, it's pretty impressive.
Steven, before we had you on earlier in the show, we were talking about, you know, the Jake Allen trade to the Montreal Canadiens. The Habs give up that third round pick. Now they have around, you know, $15 million tied up in their goaltending. And just going back to that Canucks-Vegas series, you know, with the way that Thatcher Demko played in that series, obviously with the big wins and stopping, you know, 300 shots or whatever it was at the end of the day, if you're Jim Benning, what are you doing? Because I've seen, you know, some proposals out there that, you know, you obviously have to pay Jacob Markstrom, but then maybe the Canucks decide to expose Markstrom and protect Demko in the expansion draft. Like, what do you do there? It's obviously, you know, a good problem to have, but it's kind of also a bad problem to have.
I think because of the expansion draft, I think they let Jacob Markstrom walk. I really do. And that's not just based off of the last three games of Thatcher Demko. That's knowing what the Canucks realize they have in Thatcher Demko as kind of a goalie of the present and the future. That kind of Carter Hart element of you've homegrown a goaltender through your system. You know what he can do. He's not going to cost you a fortune, at least right away. And that because of the looming fact of one of your goalies going across the border to your new rival in Seattle, I can't see them doing that. I just, even if you're taking a hit for a year of saying we're going to have Demko and another cheaper veteran, a James Reimer type, someone like that with Thatcher Demko for at least a year, I don't think it's worth paying a Jacob Markstrom when you know you're going to have to potentially play a Chris Tanev. You're going to potentially pay a Brock Besser. These kind of guys, not only this offseason, but the next few offseasons. Elias Pettersson's going to need a bridge deal or a deal soon. You're not going to, even in a salary cap sport where especially the cap is flat because of the pandemic, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to bring back Jacob Markstrom, because as much as the goalie market's going to be flooded and hard for these guys to get paid, the Canucks are going to be able to find someone to replace his production for probably cheaper.
You know, Steven, is Barry Trotz suffering a little deja vu right now? I was reading your column recently, and you know, it's amazing how many similarities he's probably thinking about from past playoff performances. And more importantly, how crazy is it? I mean, maybe it's just 2020, but the fact that it's Game 7, you don't know who his starting goaltender is.
Yeah, it's weird that 2015 series between his Capitals and Vigneault's Rangers and how similar they are with the overtime games, some of the bounces. Carter Hart doing his Henrik Lundqvist impersonation in the Flyers net. But it's crazy because the Islanders have almost, like you mentioned with Jake, like you guys mentioned with Jacob Markstrom, it's a good problem to have two good goaltenders in Thomas Grace and Semyon Varlamov. And Grace played very well in relief when he came in game earlier in the series, and also when he had his one start in the second half of the back-to-back, that I think when you're second-guessing that decision, and it's something that an injury to Ben Bishop took that decision out of Rick Bonus's hands, that, hey, it's going to be Anton Khudobin because we don't have any other choice. That the Islanders, it's a major decision. It's something that Mitch Korn and Barry Trotz probably, and Lane Lambert probably talked long and hard about. I think it's going to be Thomas Greiss, but at this point, who knows? And if you make the wrong choice, like the Stars did probably with Ben Bishop in their first potential closeout game, it could have disastrous results. And in the Game 7, we've seen it. I've seen it certainly with the Capitals in the years that you could have a big play, either a save or a goal early in a game that can change the entire complexion of a game, change really the course of history, and that's how big a decision Barry Trotz and his staff have.
Steven Wino is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Steven covers the NHL for the Associated Press. He's in Edmonton quarantining before he's able to join the bubble and start covering games live and in person for the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference Finals, which will get underway starting tomorrow night. Steven, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning haven't played. It'll be one full week since they defeated the Boston Bruins last Monday, and then they're going to get underway against either the Flyers or the Islanders this coming Monday. you know, are the Lightning, you know, just in an advantageous position with all this rest, or do you think that the rust factor might be a little bit of a concern?
There's three factors here for me. One of them is that the rest helps a guy like Nikita Kucherov and maybe Steven Stamkos, though as much of a mystery injury as this has been after that core muscle surgery he had in March, I don't know that we see Steven Stamkos for this entire playoffs, but certainly a guy like Nikita Kucherov who left that Game 5 against Boston, got a chance to practice on Thursday and we believe also yesterday, and then the ability to have him as close to 100% as possible, same thing with Ryan McDonough who came back for Game 5, that's the one on the positive end. On the negative end is just there is a rust factor. And Barry Trotz mentioned last year that 9-day break that the Islanders had from sweeping the Penguins going into the Carolina series, they lost their mojo. They lost their rhythm. And that's a very real concern when you have that much time off. That said, this Tampa team has done this before. 2018, from their first round beating the Devils to the second round against the Bruins, had a week off, did fine, beat the Bruins in 5 games. And you have an added benefit this year of the Lightning got to get the change of scenery. They're flying today from Toronto to Edmonton. They get a chance to change bubbles. They get a chance to acclimate to the new ice district in Edmonton, the practice rink, the hotel, a full day earlier than either the Islanders or the Flyers. And that's going to be a benefit for them, that they're going to be able to settle in and they're going to wake up Monday morning kind of knowing where they are, really, when you wake up in a brand new hotel room. And I think that's going to be a benefit for them for sure.
Steven, we have to ask you about the Ryan Reeves hit yesterday. Obviously, it was, you know, a possible turning point in the game. Vancouver fails to score on that power play. They also got another power play in the third period, and obviously Vegas deserves a lot of credit for, you know, their penalty kill. But the NHL Department of Player Safety coming out today and saying that they're going to review this, is this, you know, a one-game suspension, a two-game suspension? What were your thoughts on that? Because it was pretty clear that that was a hit to the head.
It's a kind of hit that we've seen less of in hockey, that when you see it in kind of slow motion, it looks worse. And I'm not trying to kind of take any responsibility from Ryan Reeves here, because the responsibility gets turned to players to avoiding these kind of hits. I don't think he was trying to pick Mott's head. I don't think it was an intentional sort of hit, but the ejection and the match penalty, which is what it actually was worth it for that very reason, that you have to look and try to avoid that hit, not just not deliver a hit to the head, but intentionally try to avoid it. Now, I do think it's a game or two. I can't see it being much longer than that, given the kind of the exchange rate the NHL makes between regular season and playoff suspensions, that maybe if this were a 5, 6, 7, 8 game suspension in the regular season, it's probably worth 1, 2, maybe 3 playoff games now for Ryan Reeves.
Steven, I have to ask you about the emotional boost the Flyers got from seeing Oscar Lindblom back in the lineup. I mean, played 17 minutes with them, but just what do you think that meant for that team to have him back after his battle with cancer?
Look, this is one of the best stories in sports right now, not just hockey, not just the Flyers, but in sports, that Oscar Lindblom last played an NHL game on December 7th, about a week later, was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma, foreign bone cancer, and literally 2 months and a day after completing treatments at the University of Pennsylvania for this, with his hair not even grown back yet, what was on the ice, not just in warm-ups like he did the previous 2 games, but playing in a game. He got stuck out there for 1:39 on his first shift back. You could tell this was a guy who hadn't played in a long time. But it was I think there's an emotional boost there that you can't really quantify what it's worth to the Flyers. If we see Oscar Lindblom, if the Flyers win and we see Oscar Lindblom round back into form, he was the Flyers' leading goal scorer when he went out in December and was diagnosed with this, that there could be a legitimate on-ice impact. There's certainly an emotional boost to having him out there, especially with Sean Couturier out. I think if nothing else, when you lose a big player like a Sean Couturier and you can bring back an Oscar Lindblom with such an inspirational story, it offset maybe some of the shrug the shoulders that the Flyers might have had in a Game 6.
Stephen Wino's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's in Edmonton quarantining before he can join the bubble for the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Stephen, final question for you. It's not the first Saturday in May. It is the first Saturday in September, and given that it's 2020, everything's chaos. Let's put on your horse racing hat for a minute. It's the Kentucky Derby later on this afternoon. The bourbon is on ice, getting chilled at my house, my old Kentucky home. The band is tuning up. The choir is getting ready. Tell me why Tis the Law won't win the Kentucky Derby later on this afternoon.
The only way Tis the Law does not win the Kentucky Derby is because of that outside post that he has, a number 17 post that no horse has ever won the Kentucky Derby from. And look, this horse is a monster. Saw him win the Traverse in powerful fashion. Obviously saw him win the Belmont in powerful fashion. Authentic is also out there, another favorite. Honor AP is out there. I think this is a Tis the Law monster kind of race where we see a horse at 50, 60, 70, maybe 99-1 win this, because we have a field of 16 horses in there. Anything can happen, but everything I've seen from Tis the Law is that I'll be coming back from Edmonton and covering a Triple Crown attempt at the Preakness for the first time ever, because this is one of the best horses I've seen in my life.
There you go. Stephen Wino can talk hockey. He can definitely talk horse racing as well. Stephen, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the last couple of days of the quarantine before you can get out and enjoy the city of Edmonton and the game of hockey. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. When we come back, we talk about the Game 7 tonight between the Islanders and the Flyers. We open up the inbox, see what the comments coming in. A lot of click conversation, as you
might expect. It ain't
clickbait. Oh, there you go. Nicely done there, Dave Minuk with the pun. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Broken stick, that's why. Now it's carried out by Hayes. Over the line. With Raffle crisscrossing. Him and Hayes shoved by Barzell. Up top, cruising is Provorov. He scores! Ivan Provorov wins it in overtime. Game 7, Saturday.
And with that overtime winner, double overtime winner to be exact, by Ivan Provorov, we have another Game 7. The Islanders and the Flyers. The Flyers completing the comeback, trailing 3-1 in the series. Back to 3-all, Game 7 later on tonight. Before we start talking about that Game 7, though, we will take a look at the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Lots of talk coming in via Twitter and via text message all throughout today's show. Lots of talk earlier about the Ehlers and Line A rumors. A lot of talk, of course, now about Click for some reason. Our buddy North End Rick, leave it to the boys at Illegal Curve to put down the main ingredient in the North End Rick sandwich recently released at Bernstein's Deli. Thanks, fellas. That's what North End Rick says. Always good for a laugh. We mentioned Ken was chiming in on the Click conversation.
Ways to cook Click.
Fry it up. Take leftover pasta and fry that up too. It's crispy. I guess that would be a good description for it. We've never been that.
The lawman?
So
the
is
lawman?
It like, so, yeah. So just for the record, Gary Lawless. It's like hamburger helper, is that what it is?
No, it's canned meat.
No, it's canned meat. It's like spam.
It's spam. It's just canned meat.
I know you guys think I eat out of a dumpster, but I don't actually eat, dumpster food.
I'm pretty sure you've eaten dumpster food.
Yeah, I'm not going to take that bet.
Our buddy Gary Lawless says, is Click kosher? As far as we know,
it isn't,
but that's never stopped Ezzy before.
No.
And then we can head to things that aren't related to canned meat to talk about what they're about, the Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine rumors. Somebody was agreeing with me for once, saying, Drew, say it louder for the dummies in the back. So you dummies in the back, they're not going to trade Laine and Ehlers, and there's no reason to, so thank you for that. Anyone but Jets Pope, apparently, is I guess he's Catholic or religious, I'm not sure, saying he's loving the Illegal Curve anti-Line A trade talk. That coming back in the first hour of today's show. So much more talk of that nature.
And just for the record, that means that if you didn't listen to the earlier part of the show, that means that we don't think that Line A should be traded. That doesn't mean that we're anti-Line A.
No, anti-Line A being traded.
Well,
yeah. That's right. Anti-Line A being traded, pro-Line A remaining with the Winnipeg Jets. Much more. We want to hear from you. Send us your comments at Illegal Curve via Twitter. Send us your comments via text. Send your texts to 129090. Facebook and Instagram post your text, your tweets. We find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Okay, the Islanders and the Flyers, both teams are looking for their edge tonight in Game 7. As I mentioned, the Flyers battling back, trailing 3-1, staging the comeback on Provorov's double OT winner. How do you see Game 7 playing out later on this evening? I'll start with you, Mr. Ginsberg.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a one-goal game, right? Because we've had, you know, four of the six games have been one-goal games. It's just incredible to me, guys, that, you know, all three of the Flyers' wins have been in overtime, right? Like, it kind of reminds you, you know, if you're old enough to remember 1993, what the Montreal Canadiens did, right, with all of those overtime wins on their way to the Cup. And you know, this is going to be a very interesting Game 7 because, you know, if you look at, you know, all of the metrics and expected goals and shots and everything like that, I mean, the Islanders should have won that Game 6, right? Carter Hart was really good. And, you know, Semyon Varlamov, to me, he was so good in the first round against Pittsburgh. And, you know, I'm not saying that he's been horrible, but, you know, to me, he has struggled at times. Obviously, we've seen him pulled and Thomas Greiss come in. But, you know, that's going to be a big storyline because I think you guys would agree that Hart has been, you know, the better goaltender of the two in this series. But, you know, it's going to be something to watch.
Who do you start? Don't fence it. Barry Trotz, you're Barry Trotz right now. Who do you start?
No, it's got to be Varlamov to me. I mean, there's always a chance you go with Greiss, but Varlamov's got you this far. Greiss is a guy that can definitely give you, you know, a good start, whether it's 60 minutes or this game goes to overtime. But that would be my take, Drew, because, you know, you're not coming off of a game yesterday, right? So it's not a situation like Vegas where, you know, we thought Marc-Andre Fleury might play Game 7, right, because Leonard played Game 6 on Thursday. So that's what I would say to that. I think you would go with Varlamov. But all I'm saying is he has been shaky. And it was similar to, I think, what Colorado was dealing with Pavel Francouz before Michael Hutchinson came in. Like, mm-hmm. Francouz was fighting the puck. And, you know, that's something that wasn't talked about, I think, a lot in that series either, is that Anton Khudobin wasn't great, right? Like, mm-hmm. you had Ben Bishop, yeah. you know, start one game, but then Khudobin had to come in and, you know, clean up the mess, and the game was over by then.
The Bishop start was bizarre.
It is. Yeah. And unexpected, right? Because
yeah.
all we knew was that he was unfit to play. Like, we didn't know how serious the injury was, so you were thinking, okay, Khudobin is the guy in the mm-hmm. series, right?
Especially considering he's getting you wins.
Right. So yeah.
There was no reason to throw Bishop in there at that point in time.
Yeah.
It was just, especially because he went from being unfit to play to playing and being terrible and then back to being unfit to play.
Yeah.
So you wonder what the communication was like there between if there was 100% honesty between Bishop and the goaltending coach and the goaltending coach and Rick Bowness. It seems like somewhere in there was a broken game of telephone.
Well, that's an expensive telephone to break.
Yeah, well,
and that's a big risk. I mean, you know, and the Stars are going to be happy, obviously, to be able to advance as, you know, as a result of their Game 7 win. But, you know, it's just a very interesting situation. But yeah, like I said, I was a little surprised by that move as well.
So, who do you start tonight?
I would go with Varlamov probably.
Yeah.
I think I mean, you know, and Steven talked about it in his column. I think it's really interesting to see. All the parallels between this series and earlier series between Trotz and Vigneault and some of the players who have been in Game 7s before. But, you know what, I think I would probably end up just going with Varlamov due to the experience. I think he's probably your guy.
Do you think either team has an advantage? You know, it's now back to 3-all. It was 3-1 for the Islanders. It's so difficult to beat a team three games in a row, which is what the Flyers would be trying to do, mm-hmm. coming back from being down 3-1. So, do you think any team has an advantage entering tonight's Game 7, or is it truly a coin flip, you know, 50-50 yeah. odds
well,
sort of situation?
I would give the Islanders the advantage because even in the games that they've lost, you know, they've outplayed the Flyers in parts of those games, right? So I would
they were the better team in Game 6 for sure.
No, and that's what I said earlier, yeah. right? Like, I mean, they certainly outshot the Flyers pretty badly, right? So, like, to me, you'd give the Islanders the advantage, but, like, to me, one of the keys is, in the Flyers' wins, you've seen balanced scoring. And obviously, Ivan Provorov has probably been the best defenseman on either team in this series, and he picked up a huge goal there. But, like, Claude Giroux, to me, picked up his first goal of the playoffs in Game 5 last weekend. We were talking about that. Like, you know, you have to get more balanced scoring, because the Flyers are not a team that has one or two players. Like, this has to be talked about. Scott Laughton, right, scores the big goal. He was a healthy scratch for game two, sure. Right? Like, and we talked about James Van Riems. Yeah. Like, he's had an up and down playoffs. So you've had, you know, a lot of forwards on the Philadelphia Flyers that have had, you know, up and down playoffs, not just this one series. Like, the series against Montreal, guys, I mean, we talked about that. That wasn't like a commanding series victory. Like, Carter Hart outplayed Carey Price. The Habs outplayed the Flyers for big chunks of that series. So, like, I look at Matt Barzal, and, you know, he has had probably the best series of any forward. So Matt Barzal is a guy you're going to have to contain. JG Pageau has been on fire all playoffs, and nothing has changed. I mean, the Martin Cizikas Clutterbuck line, I mean, that line has been causing all types of problems for the Flyers. So you're going to need big performances out of guys like, you know, Travis Konecny, and, you know, Sean Couturier is also a factor that we haven't talked about, right? Like, Sean Couturier is not going to be in the lineup for game seven, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, that almost gives the Islanders the advantage there. But again, if Carter Hart plays the way he did in Game 6, then, you know, they always have a shot.
To make things come full circle,
right?
You mentioned James Van Riemsdyk being a healthy scratch. I think Van Riemsdyk comes in at number 3 on the TSN trade bait board at $7 million a season. There ain't nobody trading for that contract.
No, it's a bad contract, Drew. And, you know, Van Riemsdyk is a guy that I actually thought had a pretty good game in Game 6. And, you know, he wasn't very good earlier in the series. But, you know, he's a guy that, you know, they signed to score, you know, 20, 30 goals, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't a guy that he was brought in, you know, to be a penalty killer. He's a goal scorer, right? So it's going to be a really entertaining Game 7. You know, this is a series that it looked like the Islanders, again, kind of similar to Vegas and Vancouver, it looked like the Islanders were going to win this one in, you know, 5 or 6 games. You know, Flyers score the OT goal from Provorov, and we've got a Game 7 here. So, you know, that's all you can ask for. Going back to, you know, round one, when, you know, Dave was on the boys' trip, and, you know, it was just you and I, Drew, and I was saying that, you know, you can't really have a classic series unless you have a Game 7, and we've got 3 here.
And it's turned out to be very well, very nice indeed in terms of classic hockey. Joe Smith of the Tampa, of the Athletic.com is going to join us next. The Tampa Bay Lightning lying in wait for the winner of tonight's Game 7. We talk about the Eastern Conference Final and the Lightning coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live. Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, we're pleased to welcome to the program Joe Smith. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. Joe, appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you this morning?
Doing well. How about you guys?
Doing very well. Hurry up and wait for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Haven't played since last Monday. Won't get started until 2 days from now, the 7th of September. How is the team sort of biding their time with this long week off between games?
Well, it's the whole rest versus rust argument, right? I think, you know, they had a couple of days off after that hard-fought 5-game series with Boston. A couple of guys were banged up. They had 2 days off, and they practiced on Thursday and Friday. They're flying out today to Edmonton to get settled in their new bubble after 41 days in their Toronto bubble. So, you know, they had some crisp, short practices that couple days, and they felt good about it. You know, they want to be able to stay fresh, but also give themselves a needed rest, knowing what will happen going forward. So I think they handled it the right way, and you don't know until that game one whether it's going to help or hurt, but I guess it could be worse. You could be playing in game seven tonight, right, after a long series, and have to play two days later.
No, Joe, you know how deep the Tampa Bay Lightning are, and I think that's what, you know, a lot of people are pointing to, the difference between, you know, this year's team and last year's team, the acquisitions that they made, you know, whether that's a Kevin Shattenkirk on defense or whether that's, you know, acquiring Blake Coleman from the New Jersey Devils. And, you know, one of those depth players now, if you want to call him a depth player, even though, you know, he's a top six forward, is Andre Palat. And he really stood out to me in that Boston series because, as you know, Palat didn't have any goals prior to the second round, and he scored 5 goals in that series. Like, what changed between, you know, the first round and the second round? Because it seemed like that was the Palat from, you know, 4 years ago or 5 years ago when the Lightning went to the Stanley Cup final.
Well, he's actually had a heck of a year, quite frankly. It was kind of a under-the-radar type player in comparison to the guys on his line with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov. But he came in the first camp last September in tremendous shape. He had revamped his training, trying to get a step faster, which he did. And he was just solid all year. He wasn't a big-name guy or like a flashy guy, but he did all the engine of any line he played on. And I think he just got rewarded for some of the work he did in the series. And obviously he's got a great shot, and the power play goal was one of them. You know, but I think overall he's getting rewarded for the work he's put in and the kind of player he is. But no doubt a very clutch player, a guy that they've leaned on in the last number of playoff runs. And it's good for him to get attention on that line because, you know, it's hard to get that attention when you play with Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point, one of the top superstars in the league. So I think people are getting a chance to notice him and appreciate him a little bit more.
You know, Joe, if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are you looking forward to playing more? Is it the Philadelphia Flyers or the New York Islanders?
It's a tough one. I mean, I've said that the Islanders might be a tougher matchup for Tampa because of the way that they play structured defensively. They're a really deep team. Barry Trotz has obviously had success against the Lightning before with the Capitals. They have kind of a little bit different dynamic up front with some of the speed and skill, and Barzal up front with also the fourth line. That is really, you know, heavy and it can beat you in different ways. So I think they offer a different kind of dynamic than maybe the Flyers do. And the Flyers without Couturier, if he's not playing, would be a big loss too. So both of them would be a tough matchup. But I think just overall, based upon how the look of things, it might be a little tougher matchup for the Islanders. But the way the Lightning has been playing, they could play anybody right now and still look pretty good.
Joe Smith is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for TheAthletic.com. The Lightning waiting to find out their Eastern Conference final opponent. That series will get underway on Monday night. Joe, you know, if you had to put on your prognostication cap, do you think Nikita Kucherov will be in the Lightning lineup? Will he be healed enough from whatever is ailing him to play in Game 1 on Monday?
Yeah, what we've heard is from early on that he'd be fine for Game 1. That's when we thought they'd be playing that tonight. But he practiced on another day, and he'll be doing fine. And I fully expect him to be in the lineup in Game 1 on Monday.
And speaking of, you know, players that didn't play at all, well, obviously Kucherov did, but speaking of Steven Stamkos, obviously there's a lot of mystery surrounding Stamkos, and I don't know, Joe, if you're able to, you know, say definitively, you know, if Stamkos is going to play, but is there any update on Stamkos? Like, do you believe that there is a chance that he could play either in the Eastern Conference Final or the Stanley Cup Final, or is it just too hard to say right now?
It's really hard to say. There have been such little information, and obviously not being in the bubble, not having any colleagues have access to practice or practice lines has made it difficult to see how he's progressing. What I've been told last week by the general manager, Julian Breezeblad, that he's not been fully ruled out for the rest of the playoffs. Now, we'll hopefully get an update, I think, from John Cooper before Monday's Game 1 on Stamkos and clarity on that. I would not expect him to be ready for the start of the conference final. Just don't get that sense. But, you know, until he's been completely ruled out for the rest of the playoffs, there's always that chance. I just don't know if it's more of an imminent, I don't think it's an imminent thing.
And Joe, I just wanted to ask you a follow-up question about the Lightning in terms of, you know, adversity. And last year, you know, being swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets, that was a huge surprise to everybody. And then they obviously beat the Blue Jackets in the first round. And then, you know, they handle the Bruins pretty easily in five games. Do you think there's any concern, you know, among the Lightning that maybe they haven't faced enough adversity this year? Or is that a stupid question? Because the adversity, as I mentioned, was last year when they lost to the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, like, I mean, they've obviously, you know, last year was a big smack dab of adversity in their face with the Columbus series, and not that they haven't faced it before, maybe not during the season last year, but overall they've lost some really tough games and some playoff runs where they thought they were on the cusp and they didn't win. But I think this year's group is just more of a mentally tougher group, a physically tougher. They brought in some different personalities and veteran guys, Maroon and Shattenkirk, and then you saw some guys that were a little more physical and playoff type style players, and Goudreau and Coleman, and then Bogosian in his first playoff with a chip on his shoulder. So both the mix of leadership and the mix of style of play, and I think what they've, the kind of the scars from the previous playoff runs, have really, I think, helped them become a more resilient, mentally tougher team, where you've seen that in the playoffs, you know, 5 overtime game in Game 1 against Columbus, I think 4 overtime wins so far in the playoffs, and you lose the lead or give up a late goal, and they're not rattled at all. So I think that's what's been the biggest difference for me, covering this team from other teams, is that aspect, and not only just being probably the deepest group that they've had in these runs, probably more physical one, but also just kind of mentally tougher, kind of determined not to be denied kind of a team.
And Joe, you touched on it a little bit in your response to Ezzie just now, but have you noticed any differences in Coach John Cooper and the way he's handling things this year? I mean, obviously there's a high level of expectation with his group, but have you noticed a difference in the way he's coaching this year and what he's been able to build upon his past experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the longest tenured coach in the league. You kind of have to evolve or else you're not going to be the longest tenured coach in the league for very long. And I think he's done a good job in different ways in terms of, you know, before he'd have his hands in everything, every meeting, and he'd run the power play. And he's really done a better job delegating, trusting his staff, giving his staff ownership in parts of the team and letting them run certain aspects of it. And he's brought in different people to kind of challenge him a bit, you know, whether it's the team psychologist or Davey Steele a couple of years ago. And I think he's really had a better feel even, too, of maybe listening to the veteran players, let them kind of have a good feel and a voice in what's going on and whether it's taking days off here, the schedule, or but he's always had a really good motivational feel and a good players type of coach. But I think you learn from your mistakes, and he owned last year's playoff failure. Part of it was on him, like everybody else, and he had to get the team ready to go after that collapse last year. And he gave him credit for getting the team mentally in the right place, make some tweaks in their game, and follow it through even when it was looking pretty bad early on the season. They're 500 hockey about a month and a half through, so. I give him and the entire staff credit for that, but mostly the players who were out there implemented it and had to hear all the questions all year long and have kind of put their own answer to it now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Joe Smith, who covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for TheAthletic.com. Joe, final question for you. Way back in hour number one of today's program, we were talking about Anthony Cirelli because we were talking about the Jets' search for a second-line center, and we know the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to have salary cap issues this coming offseason, and Cirelli is, of course, a pending restricted free agent. You know, what attribute is the best of his game? You know, he might not be the household name that comes to the forefront of someone's mind when talking about the Lightning. He's not Kucherov. He's not Stamkos. He's not Vasilevsky. But what is the best attribute that Anthony Cirelli brings to the game?
Just his relentlessness, his drive, you know, just hockey IQ. I mean, it's hard to pick one, but I think if you had to pick one, it's just kind of relentlessly and how tough he is on the puck and, you know, he rarely loses the battle, and that's what made him kind of a Selke caliber player, a guy who gets the toughest matchups night in, night out, you know, hoping to be the kind of player that Bergeron has been his whole career. And I think overall, just that compete, that, you know, doggedness on the puck, and it's really served him well. He's not the most flashiest player or a best offensive player in the game, but he's clutch in big moments, and he's just so hard to win a battle against. That's really made him a key player for these guys, both ends of the ice.
Well, they say waiting is the hardest part, Joe, and you've been waiting almost a week between Tampa Bay Lightning games. The wait is almost over. Monday night, they're going to start the Eastern Conference Final, and you'll be able to write some game stories again, which I'm sure you're looking forward to. Joe Smith covers the Lightning for TheAthletic.com. Joe, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, too. Take care.
Take care, Joe. When we come back, we move south in Florida to Miami, where the Florida Panthers have a new general manager. That's Bill Zito. We talk about the hiring of Bill Zito to be the Panthers head man up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment to come Saturday morning on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This is probably the most important decision that the Viola family has made, you know, since buying the team. And we believe you are the leader that's going to take us there, take us to the next step. So welcome, and the floor is yours.
That is Florida Panthers president and CEO Matthew Caldwell calling the hiring of Bill Zito as the most important decision the Viola family has made in their stewardship of the Florida Panthers. Look, I don't want to be one to say that the Zito hiring isn't important, but is it more important than when you decide to give Semyon Varlamov $10 million a year for the next 7 years? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Do you mean Sergei Bobrovsky, Drew?
Yes, I mean Sergei Bobrovsky.
I'm like, if they give Varlamov $10 million, they got better tell the cap friendly folks.
Like, Varlamov's going to have to play tonight for the Islanders, I think.
I meant Sergei Bobrovsky. You know, I was reading a tweet about Varlamov, and that's why it got stuck in my head. But yes, I meant Sergei Bobrovsky.
They spell and pronounce their names completely differently.
Thank you.
They're both Russian, so I mean, I guess that's fair.
Yeah, thank you. Do I get maybe, you know, a very, very small credit for that?
But no.
Not even any credit whatsoever.
No, you're right. The signing of the goaltender is pretty important too.
Yeah,
when you give him that many shekels,
because I'm pretty sure Bill Zito isn't making $10 million a year, but maybe he isn't. If he is, good for him.
No, but I mean, obviously the point was that this is an organization that has changed directions numerous times.
Yeah, they lurch from strategy to strategy to strategy.
And here's an opportunity for a guy who's very well respected. He's had a lot of interviews for different GM positions, and to me, you know, like. It's interesting. Like, when you talk about an opportunity to put someone in a position to lead the, you know, to drive the boat, you really need someone who, like, I know that folks love to give it to former NHLers, but I'm thinking to myself, like, what experience is what's your prerequisite for being a GM? I would think, I'm not adverse to a former NHLer doing it if they have a GM experience.
Sure.
Because then they have the business aspects, but, you know, it's not just about being able to make a phone call because you're part of a network, you know, and you played the game and you have contacts. I mean, there's a lot more to it. And you know, let's be realistic. The guys who are the AGMs do a lot of legwork. You don't hear about them, but these guys do a ton of the work.
Yeah.
So, you know, when it comes to the cap, when it comes to compliance, I mean, these guys are doing quite a bit. But at the same time, I just
did quote unquote, that's called grunt work, for lack of better terminology.
Sure, for sure. And I just think, like, from my point of view, this is a guy who's put in his dues. He's well respected.
Yeah.
And it seems like, and again, I'm not going to anoint him the second coming because, you know, the reality is, aside from the AGM in the city of a team that you might cover, how much do people really know about assistant general managers of other teams?
Minimally.
Right. So he's very well respected in Columbus, the organization, obviously, and, you know, again, it's kind of like a non-traditional, right? Because Kekalaimi wasn't expected to be, you know, a GM. Like, when he got that, it was kind of like an off-the-board pick in Columbus.
Nobody thought that Jarmo Kekalainen was going to be the, you know, was going to be the general manager necessarily.
And he's done a great job.
And I was going to say, he seems to have done a very good job.
Yep.
So you got to think, from a Panthers perspective, you've inherited a guy who's learned from someone who has put his team into a very good position, despite the fact that, you know, they've looked at what they lost, and they've still been able to challenge.
And John Davidson, right? Like,
that's
you know, who, you know, we've had on the show before. And, you know, he's such a smart hockey guy. And I agree, Dave. And, you know, this is a really seminal moment for the Florida Panthers because, you know, let's be honest. Like, they've had some disappointing seasons. Like, they were expecting, you know, this season to go differently. And that, you could say that about a lot of teams, guys. But when you bring in Sergei Bobrovsky, a former Vezina winner, and you bring in Joel Quenneville as your head coach, and you've got Alexander Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau and, you know, so many good players, Aaron Ekblad. Like, the Panthers, to me, have been underachievers
for
a long time. And, you know, when you look at, you know, some of the guys they're going to lose, like Mike Hoffman, Evgeny Dadonov, Eric Hallett, like, these guys are UFAs. Like, there's a chance all three of those guys are gone. There's a good chance. I mean, maybe they, you know, bring back, like, for me, it would be Dadonov would be the guy, you know, of the three that I would bring back, just because he's been so good on that top line, right, with Barkov. So, I mean, there's going to be some huge decisions that, you know, you have to make. And they've got, you know, some really good prospects in the system. And Bill Zito talked about that, right? Like, guys like Henrik Borgstrom or Denisenko. Spencer Knight is a really highly regarded goalie prospect that I think they see in the NHL. Maybe not next year, but a couple of years from now.
The
future is bright. There's the prospects to work with there, but I also think Zito's going to be, you know, active in free agency because you're going to have to replace these guys, you know, like Dadonov and Hoffman, because those are guys that, you know, contributed big offensive numbers for you. You know, you've still got, I think, a really good solid defense there. You know, maybe a guy like Mike Matheson hasn't worked out, you know, quite like they would, and so you might want to bring in, you know, a top four defenseman in the offseason. But to me, there's enough piece, like, this isn't necessarily a rebuild. Like, I think the Panthers, they want to get back into the playoffs next year.
If they can get Bobrovsky back to playing like Sergei Bobrovsky, like the guy that they thought they were going to get when they paid him $10 million a year, then that will solve a lot of problems.
Yep.
But their goaltending, he was terrible this year. I mean, he was outplayed by the other goaltenders in the organization.
Including a Winnipegger.
Including a Winnipegger and Chris Driedger all season long. And when you pay a guy, a goalie, $10 million a year, you can't have that happen.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the 26th season, I think, or for the Panthers, 25th, 26th season for them, and they have 5 or 6 playoff appearances.
Yeah.
And just, I think, 2 in the last 10 or 15 years or something like that. So, or 3 technically if you include this year's bizarro sort of
qualification.
Qualifier.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, that's just a situation where you have to, you know, you've been building for so long. Obviously this year they're switching their AHL affiliation. They're taking on the formerly the Charlotte Checkers, who are now, I think, believe they're going to be called the Charlotte Panthers, I'm assuming. I'm not 100% sure if that's the name they went with, but because obviously there was Charlotte, the Carolina Hurricanes and Charlotte, their agreement expired. And so they went with, who'd they take?
Did they go, I don't know.
Vegas. I mean, it's so weird, right? Because Vegas took over, San Antonio, and then St. Louis is with Chicago. And I think what happened was Charlotte took, I think the Carolina Hurricanes, took Springfield, and that left Florida with Charlotte. So, anyways, it'll be really interesting, but you got your AHL team a little bit closer to home, which is actually not a bad thing either.
Certainly not. It'll be a very interesting offseason, like it will be for all of the NHL teams that aren't currently playing, as the conference finals will get underway tomorrow. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests, Joe Smith of The Athletic, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press, Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent, and back in hour number one, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the show, in case you missed any of those interviews, they're available on tsn1290.ca. They're available on illegalcurve.com. They're available wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support the Legal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor back at the station. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.